Well, good morning. Welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. This is the 195.1 FM and, of course, for over 50 years, KYMN Radio, 1080 on your AM dial. It is a Friday morning, somewhat overcast, and the temperature's 10 degrees. They're all above zero. And today is January 18th, and the year is 2019. And my guest this morning on KYMN Radio appeared recently on 1080 AM and 95.1. But we weren't talking about him. We were talking about something else. And I asked him if he would come back and do an interview with me. And this was the first opportunity we had. Probably not going to get done today. Very interesting man, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Charlie Cogan. Good morning. Want to get that mic nice and close?
Yeah.
He can bring it to you, by the way.
Okay.
You don't have to...
go towards it?
Yeah, you know, get comfortable in the chair, and then you put the mic in front of you. So, Charlie, how you doing?
Doing fine, thank you. How about yourself?
Do you like Charlie, Charles, or Chuck?
No, I like Charlie.
Okay, you know, I was thinking the same thing. I like Charlie. And Charlie, thank you for coming in. I appreciate it. And we're going to chat about different things. I'm going to play the most popular tunes in 1978. And that's the year that you graduated. And I'm going to do something unusual here. I'm going to play one just for the heck of it and see if... you can guess the name of it and who performed it in 1978. I'm going to play the number 10 song. Then we're going to come back and get started with our interview. And we'll see if you know this song on KYMN Northfield, Minnesota. And I'll be right back to find out if he knows this song.
Thanks for the times that you've given. The memories are all in my mind. And now that we've come to the end of our rainbow, there's something I must say out loud.
What are you going to say out loud?
You once, twice, three times later.
All right, there we go. Charlie, I played the number 10 song in all of 1978 when you graduated from high school. Name that tune.
Is it Once, Twice, Three Times a Lady?
Correct. Name that performer.
Maybe Lionel Richie?
He's doing it, but at that time he was in the Commodores.
Okay, the Commodores.
But sure. You got it. And the reason I did that, I forgot something out in the other green room, so I had to run and go get something. So I thought, what am I going to do? So I did it. Well, now I can settle down and relax. And Charlie, first of all, what I like to do establishes who the individual is in studio, and then I like to start with where were you born.
Sure.
So what are you doing today in your life?
Today I work as a strategy consultant with a educational consultancy called Crimson Education, founded by New Zealanders, but now they have offices around the world.
And do you live in Northfield?
I live in Northfield.
Okay, and do you work out of your home, or do you travel a lot?
When I first started, I worked at Carleton for 17 years.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And when I left Carleton in September of 2017, I was a consultant, and so I needed to find consulting jobs. And I knew somebody at Crimson Education, and they brought me to Europe and to Asia to do some presentations as they were launching new offices. And then they brought me back again to Europe to help launch some new offices in Dublin and Edinburgh and Frankfurt and
wow.
Munich and Zurich. It was really, really a neat trip.
Oh, for sure.
We got to go to the Ashimolean Museum at Oxford University that I'd never visited.
I'm not suggesting you're old, but wouldn't it have been fun to have that job right out of college.
Yeah, yeah, I think it would have been.
You know, to you know, enjoy a plane ride and right. travel the world and all of that. What did you do at Carleton?
I was in the admissions office, and I came in 2000 because Carleton got a grant from a foundation called the Star Foundation to launch international student recruitment, but also at the same time to set up a cross-cultural studies. Now it's a minor. It used to be called a concentration to get international students sort of incorporated into the student body and talking about issues together with American students and working together to solve all the world's problems.
Now, where was your office?
It was, at the time, in a building called the Alumni Guesthouse, Johnson House, which is sort of right on the corner of campus. It's sort of, is it kitty corner from the chapel?
Oh,
and now,
that new place?
It's kind of a nice...
Looks like a house?
Yeah, it looks like a house.
And yeah, that's where guests stay when they come.
Right. Yeah, we always had a pretty good deal because if there was a luncheon or something, we'd walk by later. Well, anyway, I won't say that out loud.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
See what kinds of nice leftovers were there.
The meeting is over, and they leave, and then you go in, okay, apples, bananas, juice, coffee, rolls.
And about a year and a half ago, the college remodeled Scoville Hall, the one that looks like a castle.
Uh-huh.
And the admissions office moved across the street to Scoville and set up shop, and it's beautiful in there. If you ever have a chance, you should go and take a look.
Okay.
And then the Career Center moved in to the Alumni Guesthouse, and so they're the main tenants of the Alumni Guesthouse now.
Well, this building is owned by Carleton,
mm-hmm.
and I see all these people coming and going, and I went upstairs, and I know it's a huge office space. Does that have anything to do with admissions?
I think that's external relations. So there's a vice president for external relations, and they do college relations and alumni relations, fundraising, you know, development work. And I think that division is over on this side now.
So you explained where you go and all that for Crimson Education. I don't understand what exactly you do.
What I do... When I was helping them to launch new offices, what they do is a variety of things. But they have a team of people who help students who are looking to study in either the UK, Australia, New Zealand, or the United States. And so let's say you're in Vietnam and you have these really bright students who are learning English and their English is getting very good and they've got a brilliant science background and they want to go to a really top-notch university. They would ask Crimson for help navigating the process. And so then Crimson would have, you know, SAT tutors and TOEFL tutors and ACT tutors, but they would also have access to people who can work with students who don't really get the sense of an extracurricular profile. Because in the United States, at Northfield High School, students often have a lot of different activities. They have sports at the schools. They have Leo Club, or they have all these different really good things they're doing, Model United Nations or Youth in Government. In a lot of parts of the world, the schools really just focus on studies. And so there might be a couple of leadership positions, like a prefect or something from Harry Potter. But in terms of the general broad portfolio of things that the American students tend to have, you don't get that as much.
Now, would I be correct in saying it's a prep school for college?
It's kind of a prep program because they have offices around the world. So a couple of students I work with are in Brazil. One of them's in a town where we used to have a Rotary Youth Exchange student from called Recife. And so, for example, for her, she's a wonderful student, but just navigating the whole U.S. education system, finding a good summer program for the year before she's going to apply, you know, taking the kinds of courses that get her good scores on the TOEFL, which is the test of English as a foreign language, and then preparing for the SAT, which is much different than anything you'd ever do in Brazil. It takes a sort of a process, and so I work with a team of people who will then work with the student, and each of them works on different parts of the application to just get her reinforced and help her to prepare to navigate this process into for example, when I was a high school student, if somebody had said, Oxford University is wonderful, you should go there, I wouldn't have known how to even begin that process.
Okay.
And I never did. So this is to help students to navigate it.
Are they generally students of wealthy parents?
Sometimes. I would say in general, they're at least students of parents who are willing to invest in helping their kids to navigate these things. Some families are wealthier than others, And some families put such a high priority on education that they're willing to leverage probably more of their resources than others would.
I had a friend who wanted to go to the Naval Academy.
Right.
And when we were in high school, and a dear close friend unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago, but when we were in high school, we goofed off a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to get into the Naval Academy, and he went to a school to prepare to make a presentation or take a test or whatever they do. And in the meantime, he had to contact congressmen, women, in those days not many women, but and senators.
Right.
And I'm, you know, we're from the blue-collar world, and I'm just looking at him and saying, are you nuts? You have to, you're actually going to try to talk to a congressman or a senator?
Right.
And you're going to go to school?
Yeah.
And he ultimately did not get in, but he did contact the proper individuals, and at that time, I think it might have been Humphrey, and I was pretty impressed with that. So there's a similarity here that what you do, and what you do is probably help the people that are administrating the program,
right?
And work with them, although you do have a chance to meet some of the students, mm-hmm. prospective students.
Right. A lot of times the conversation I might have with a student would be sort of broad to get to know them, but then to find out what their needs are and what their ambitions are. So if they've given you a list, it's often, you know, I want to go to Harvard, Yale, Princeton, or Stanford. And then you have to kind of take a look at their background and whether or not that's even a good fit, because there are so many great schools in this country and so many different kinds of places that they're located in. Some have campuses, some don't. Some have housing, some don't. Some have financial aid for an international student, some don't. So you kind of look at the big picture, and then you start thinking, okay, this is a wonderful student. I'm working with a student in South Africa who's a wonderful cellist. But at some point, you know, how is she going to take this? Is it just going to be a cellist in the school orchestra and then that's it? Or would she maybe want to do a program to help young kids who'd love to learn cello in some of the less privileged schools? I mean, so there are so many chances to at least have a chat with students. And then sometimes they're so motivated, they come up with these great ideas and start trying to do things on their own. And I think that's a part of the process of taking charge of their own lives that makes them so much better adapted for college.
Well, nowadays, not only are your grades super important, but you have to hand in several pages of your social activities and your altruistic efforts. Does that also apply to these individuals that want to get into the colleges to be do their background like that?
Well, what's interesting, let's say you wanted to go to one of the, you know, Oxford or Cambridge in the UK. They'll do an interview with you. They'll send a professor, and they'll interview the top candidates. And that interview, if you're applying for physics, will be a physics professor who's going to grill you and see how much physics you know. And it doesn't matter if you're the president of the student body and everything else. If they don't want to work with you as a physics student, you may be out of luck, because they're not looking for the well-rounded sort of jack-of-all-trades. They want somebody who's going to be really pushing the limits in the field that they're being admitted to. For the United States, we want brilliant people, but we also want people who are going beyond just the academic side. And so the admissions process to the United Kingdom or maybe to a German university would be based on national exams that are pretty specific, and all the rest of it might be considered fluff. When I started doing the job that I did for Carleton in 2000, a lot of students in Singapore, for example, would say that their school is actually discouraging them from doing too many extracurricular activities. Because if you're trying to get into Oxford or Cambridge, it's only your score on the A-levels exams that would actually dictate whether you get in or not. So they thought of all the rest of it as just fluff and distraction. You know. And then little by little, as students began to look more at the U.S., and our admissions process does give a lot more weight to the whole person and not just to the test scores, it's a whole different process. And I think navigating that in many parts of the world is what creates a need for companies like Crimson that can come in and at least help to work the students through that process as they try to adapt to a whole different educational system, a whole different admissions process.
When I had the opportunity to be president of the Minnesota Broadcasters mm-hmm. Association,
sure.
and introduced a lot of different programs to help radio stations and television stations to generate more income by making their presentation over the air desirable, consequently numbers, and therefore mm-hmm. more dollars. However, there were there was a joke among me and the CEO that I had running the organization, and that is the word consultant. And it was described as somebody who thinks they know how to run your job but never did it themselves successfully. Not to offend you, but have you ever run into that where people raise their eyebrows and say, oh, a consultant, why don't you do your own thing if you're so smart?
No, I think it's interesting. And maybe one of the reasons that I'm useful in the company that I'm working for is that I do have 20 some years of experience in the field, so that if I'm coming at an issue, it's a little bit like Charlie Kite. You know, he was a yes. superintendent for so many years that when he talks about the work that a superintendent does, he has a certain credibility because he's sure. been in that. And I would think in the Army, it's that like the officer who actually worked their way up through the ranks and has actually been in the field, been in the front lines and done all of that, will get a lot more respect once they get to a certain level, because people will say, yeah, they actually know. They've walked in my shoes, and this person has actually been in the position that they're expecting me to then. So I think there's a certain credibility that comes with old okay. age,
yes,
or with, you know, long years of experience. Yeah. But having said that, you know, it doesn't mean that you can go in and tell people how to do their jobs. You know, if you do that, you're kind of defeating your own purpose, because you need to learn to listen to people and then see what they need.
Well, and when I sold the radio station and went into basically retirement, one of the things my wife told me was, why don't you start a consulting firm and, you know, work the Midwest? And I thought about that, and then I had some issues in regards to my health, etc. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of sorry that I didn't try. And my excuse was, corporate America has taken over the broadcast world. You could go to one radio station, independently owned and operated, and say, "Hey, here's what worked for me." No problem. But now the corporation comes in, and they own a bunch of radio stations, and they have their own consultants and sales pitchers. So it kind of fell by the wayside. But it's part of my life that I wish I would have pursued. Mm-hmm. I did do a couple of radio stations, but not on a, you know, $100 an hour plus expenses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
19 minutes after 10 o'clock on KYMN Radio. My guest this morning on Kim is Charlie Cogan. He is a Northfield resident and travels the world in his position with Crimson Education, and that is recruiting and helping students get into the colleges they want to get into. So you must have met a lot of smart young people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. From the beginning, I grew up in a small town in Missouri, and I thought I was really smart. And then I ended up...
Show me.
And I couldn't show people because I wasn't that smart. But when I got to college and looked around, I realized, you know, I was a pretty nice guy, but I was no genius compared to my classmates. And I think that's just been an experience all the way through life. You have to realize that if you're in a room full of bright people, you learn from them. And then as you learn, you actually might have something to share, too. So I know as a liberal arts college graduate, the first sense that you get is that you've got this broad base, but you're not an expert in anything. And I remember a talk for a convocation. No, I think it was for graduation. And there's a guy who's a professor now at the University of Chicago. And he said that when he got to University of California, Berkeley for graduate school, for the first 2 weeks, he was overwhelmed because he hadn't had the kind of professional training that a lot of the other graduate students had. And then after about 2 weeks, he realized that he didn't have that, but he did have an ability to learn things quickly. And so then he ended up really, really doing well. But he said the first 2 weeks, there were people who knew the language that you were supposed to be speaking in the program. You know, there were things that he didn't know, but then he did know how to learn what he needed. So I think that's the process. We're always going to be students.
Well, let's get started on your life. And you're probably too young to remember a show on television. It was called This Is Your Life. And then they'd have some well-known individual come in, and a guy, I think his name was Edwards, I'm not sure, and he'd hold a book in his hand, and he'd go to page one, and then all of a sudden there'd be a voice saying, Tommy, I used to always love you because you never spilled the ink well. And he goes, oh, my God, that's my teacher, Mrs. Smith.
Right.
And then it was fun for that. It was a good show, but it was a short show with the commercials and all that. But this show, The Wayne Eddy Affair, we don't worry about time because you can always come back.
Right.
So what we're going to do is start off with, where were you born?
I was born in Bayshore Hospital in Long Island.
So
my father and mother met at the Teachers College at Columbia University. And my mother finished her master's degree in speech therapy before my dad finished his dissertation. And so since they needed food to eat, she got a job at Great Neck North High School. And I was born when she was teaching there, and my dad was scribbling away.
Did you live in Long Island?
I did for about 6 months. I got out of there fast before I got the accent.
Yeah, okay. So well, what is Long Island? I hear that, and when I traveled on the East Coast, I was amazed at what short time it took to get from one state to the other. And they're all so little, and they're all stuffed in that little northeast corner. And when you refer to Long Island, I'm trying to still learn Manhattan and Brooklyn and the Bronx and that place.
All right. Here's my best, yeah. And I'm not a New Yorker, although I was born there, but we moved out when I was young, lived in New Jersey, Vermont, and then moved to Missouri. Long Island, I think, is basically when you get done with Queens, you're still on the same island, and so if you keep on going out, it becomes Long Island. So Queens is one of the boroughs. But it's part of Long Island. And so as you leave the more urbanized part of Long Island, it used to be a little bit more rural out in the rest of the island. And so they called it Long Island, but little by little, it's all filled in.
Is it literally an island?
Yeah, I think it's an extension of the island.
I mean, do you have to take a ferry or a tunnel or
a boat? I think there used to be a Long Island ferry, but now I think you also can take the bridges.
Okay.
So there are bridges across. So you'd have to go over a bridge to get from Queens to Manhattan. And to do that, you know.
So how big is Long Island in regards, do you think, the east, west, north, south?
It's a good question. Let me say that I moved away when I was 6 months old.
Okay. Are you going to Google it?
Yeah, I can Google it, but I don't want to do that right now. I could Google it, and we could come back next time, and I'll tell you exactly how big it is. It's big enough that there are areas that aren't very populated, and the reason I know that is that my kids read a series of books called Percy Jackson and the Olympians. And their camp is called Camp Half-Blood for all the demigod kids. And it's out in a place called Montauk.
Demigod?
Yeah, they have at least one parent who's a god or a goddess. And it's out in a place called, I think it's Montauk in Long Island. And that must be rural because otherwise everybody would know that there was this camp full of demigods. So I'm assuming there are parts of Long Island that are still pretty rural.
You know, I said to myself one day, is Google really right on what they do? And I thought about it, so I Googled it.
Yeah. Did you Google yourself? That's the key.
No, you got it. I Googled it. Googled to find out. Google. Never mind.
All right, yeah.
I was attempting to be humorous 25 minutes after 10 o'clock on KYMN Radio. There is a place in Northfield that I hope you've been to, the Quarterback Club on Highway 3 and 3rd Street in Northfield.
Yeah, of course.
What you enjoy? What do you order?
Well, I've had biscuits and gravy there before in the morning, which are nice. I know they're not healthy, but they taste awfully good.
Yeah. Jeff Johnson does that every, I think it's Thursday, goes over there and does that. Well, I like to speak for Dwayne, for Mr. Finger, Dale.
Yeah.
And he, of course, runs a great operation. Some of the employees have been there over 40 years.
Right.
And the thing that is best, it's locally owned, locally operated, opportunity for young people to get their first job. But they serve breakfast 6 to 10 every morning, Monday through Friday. Actually, 7 to 10 on Saturday. And they invite you to come on in for breakfast. They serve you fast and quick, and they have anything you can imagine that you'd want for breakfast at the QB, the Quarterback Club on Highway 3 and 3rd Street in downtown Northfield. My guest this morning on Kim is Charlie Cogan, and he is District Manager the World of Crimson Education, born in Long Island. But then where did you spend your first part of your life in regards to maybe elementary school?
When we left Long Island, my father got a job at a place called Jersey City College, and now I think it's called Jersey City University. But he coached soccer and taught. My father was an old athlete. And he played basketball for a good team back when there was no NCAA, but they were NIAA, and they went to the national championship and had one player who went to the NBA. But when he got through with Korea, he came back and went to graduate school and studied physical education, did his doctorate in physical education.
So you're from New Jersey?
Well, that's where I lived after New York. We lived there 3 years.
New Jersey?
Yeah, New Jersey, in a place called Jersey City, and then another town called Bayonne.
Okay.
And then we moved up into the mountains in Vermont, in a little place
called... Well, you're going too fast.
Okay, right? Gotcha, sure.
A lot of people, young people particularly, don't appreciate and understand the Korean War, which was a horrible... All wars are horrible.
Right.
Did your dad serve in Korea?
Yeah, he served in Korea.
Was he a foot soldier?
He wasn't. He actually worked in a prisoner of war camp. And he was the head of recreation. And so he actually brought back, he worked on physical education.
Sure.
But also on everything, arts, crafts, just all kinds of things that you would do with the prisoners, which I think was a real revelation for the prisoners, because they'd been told if they were ever captured, they'd be immediately executed. And he made, I think, some lifelong friends among the fellow soldiers, but also, I think, had a good relationship with the prisoners. And they actually made him a lot of gifts when he left. And I think that changed his approach. I don't think he was a big academic star when he was an undergrad. He was more of an athlete. He played four or five sports and loved it. When he came back, he was much more interested in the impact that physical education and recreation can have on a person and mind, body. I mean, just all kinds of really neat stuff. He was a little ahead of his time. So he came back and went to Columbia University, an Ivy League university, and they said, you know, your undergraduate record doesn't look like what we would ordinarily expect, but we could give you a try because you're a Korean War vet and you've served the country. So why don't you take 1 year? We'll see how you do. And if you can handle it, then we'll let you keep on going. And he actually had by that time a passion for what he wanted to do, and he did great. But
did his service in Korea, did he ever share that with you? It appears that obviously you shared some things, but did he sit down like most veterans, Vietnam, Second World War, Korea, they don't like to talk about it. But
he talked about some things. I mean, he talked about the impact that he thought their programs in the camp had on the prisoners. He knew about the bloodshed and the death. I mean, you know, it's a little bit like my mother and father used to watch MASH. And I think that
was based on the Korean War,
right? Yeah. And I think he loved that show because he felt that it did capture, you know, the terrible side, but also the fact that you're still a human being living in a place dealing with other human beings. And so, just how do you live in the middle of a conflict like that and try to keep your sanity?
Do you have siblings?
Yeah, I have five brothers and sisters.
Well, I'm going to write down names. Who is the oldest in your family?
Yeah, I'm the oldest.
Okay, and then after you?
There's a sister named Deirdre. Like it's an Irish name, Deirdre.
How do you spell it?
Deirdre.
Deirdre.
Deirdre. And it's like Deirdre of the Sorrows is a famous Irish thing.
Did you ever you ever call her Dared?
And nobody ever called her Deirdre. People called her Dee Dee or Dirty or whatever. I mean, who knows? Okay. Yeah, she
Dee Dee. How much younger is she?
She's 2 years. My mother was pretty prolific. She had a kid every 2 years until my youngest baby sister.
Well,
was.
We got you, then Deirdre.
And then Elin, E-L-I-N.
E-L-I-N.
Yeah, Elin.
Okay.
We used to call her Alien, but E-L-I-N. I think it's a Scandinavian name.
That's a girl?
Yeah, E-L-I-N.
Oh.
Yeah, don't worry about it. And then the next one is a brother named Dana, D-A-N-A.
Okay.
And he lived in Northfield for a little while when he was looking to relocate from Japan, but he ended up going back to Japan. And then there's a sister named Tasha.
Tasha.
Yeah, there's a little Russian side to the family, so that's that's the first one where my dad got to have some input. And then there's a youngest is named Caitlin, C-A-I-T-L-I-N, C-A-I-T-L-I-N. But she just went with Katie. There were no Caitlins back then.
So that's before Jenner.
Yeah, that's before Jenner, you know, long before.
See if we got this third one right. Eilin?
Eilin.
E-L-I-N. I'm going to just put A. Okay, I like to refer to
I think
to
Tiger
that.
Woods' first wife was named Eilin, E-L-I-N.
Oh.
But I don't know.
Well, so you're the main man.
Yeah. They don't seem to think so, but well, I've certainly always thought so.
I would assume that you had to do some babysitting.
Yeah, a fair amount. We were lucky we had a dog, so the dog would herd them around for me a lot of times.
How much younger is Caitlin than you?
Caitlin is 14 years younger. So okay. When I was a freshman at Carleton, she came to visit, and she was 4.
Yeah, just a little girl. Little girl. And you lived in Jersey City?
For a little while. You know, we lived for 3 years.
Yeah.
And then in Bayonne, which is... It used to be very Italian, and now it's a whole different.
And what is Bayonne?
Bayonne is nearby. Apparently it had some bad years where they used to call it the armpit of the earth, but I think it's actually now full of wonderful Indian restaurants. So, you know, places change. But at the time, it was very Italian. And my father had a soccer team that won the New England championships.
Bayonne.
Bayonne. B-A-Y-O-N-N-E.
Was there?
It's named after a city in France.
Is there any particular industry there or educational institutions?
Jersey City College was there, so that's why my father was teaching
okay.
there.
So you went to grade school in Bayonne?
No, that was from age maybe 6 months to 3.
Okay.
And then we moved up to the mountains in Vermont.
Is there a city in the mountains?
A city called Castleton.
Castleton, Vermont. Why does that sound familiar?
It's a pretty cool place. C-A-S-T-L-E. There's a Battle of Hubbardton. Was one of the Revolutionary War battles that was fought near there.
Okay.
So we'd get tourists who'd come up to visit, and we had a house near a lake, and so they'd camp out in our backyard and then go visit the battlefield.
Did you ever watch Air America?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's on the Aerial America. Mm-hmm. And I watched them, of course, you'd mm-hmm. root for Minnesota and all that.
Of course.
It's all from the sky. And of course, they showed Vermont in the fall.
Oh, yeah.
Which is breathtaking.
Right.
And then you think of maple syrup.
Right.
Okay, what else do I think about Vermont? It's little.
Yeah.
And it's doesn't seem to get involved too much in anything outside of Vermont.
Right.
Am I close?
Well, maybe, but they seem to have a kind of an interesting group of politicians. You got Bernie Sanders, who was a...
Oh,
senator,
that's right. That's
and then
right.
you've got Leahy, Patrick Leahy, another senator who was pretty progressive.
Okay.
And they had a guy who was the governor who ran for president for a while. I'm trying to remember his name, which shows you how plugged in I am. So I think they have an interesting thing because rural Vermonters are kind of like hobbits. You know, they have their own way of doing things, and they're mm-hmm. pretty set in them. And then, but they also have all these people who've moved into Burlington and some of the big cities who are from New York and the surrounding states. So you've got an interesting mix of debate. But
now, did you say you lived in the wilderness in the woods?
It was in an area. There's a lake called Lake Bomazene, and it's not famous for this, but I know apparently in the 1940s and 50s there's a group called the Algonquin Roundtable. You know, the Marx Brothers and all these kind of interesting comedians and singers and musicians and artists. Used to hang out at Lake Bomazene, and so we lived across the lake, but we could actually see the place where they used to live when I was a kid, but I was between age 3 and age 6, so my memories are just that campers would come and ask if they could camp in our backyard, and we lived in a big, beautiful house that had secret rooms from back in the days of the Underground Railroad. So you touch this candelabra and turn it a little bit, and you could
really?
Open up a secret room. Yeah.
That's cool.
So whenever people came to play hide-and-go-seek, we'd always win, but otherwise, yeah.
I'm going to take a brief break, sure. And then we'll be right back. It's 25 minutes before 11 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. My guest this morning on KIM is a gentleman by the name of Charlie Coogan. He lives right here in Northfield, but travels the world in his job with Crimson Education.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
I'm Priya, and I'm part of the amazing community at CrossFit Scopos. I found myself getting bored with my usual gym routine. That's when I found CrossFit Scopos, a functional group fitness methodology dedicated to making you move better. You'll never be bored with a new workout every day planned by one of our fantastic coaches. CrossFit Scopos is for everybody. We don't throw tires. This community is inclusive and fun, and the workouts are making me stronger. I love this gym, and I guarantee you will too. Stop by anytime. We're located in Dundas off Highway 3 next to Menards.
Number four in all of 1978, the year my guest graduated from high school. Well, you can tell by the way I do now. Name that tune.
Staying Alive by the Bee Gees.
You got it, 100%. Some people diss this type of music, but I like it.
Yeah, I think I still have some gold chains left over from those days.
Okay. Welcome back. We are talking with a gentleman named Charlie Coogan. He travels the world for Crimson Education, formerly worked for Carleton College, and lives right here in Northfield, Minnesota. And he moved around quite a bit in his youth. He is the oldest of six children, and his parents were educators. So after Castleton, Vermont,
right?
Then where?
Then the world is a small place, so my father, when he was in college, played for a really good basketball team at Central Connecticut, and they had played against a team called Kirksville State Teachers College in Northeast Missouri, and they had a player named Harry Gallatin, who ended up playing for the Knicks for a long time and is in the Hall of Fame now. And so, unfortunately, my father's team got their butts kicked, even though they had a great team, too. They lost by 10, so they didn't get their butts kicked, but they lost. And so the job that he was interviewed for next, he walked into the room in what's now Truman State University in Northeast Missouri, and half of the department recognized his name and then remembered scoring baskets against him or something. So it was actually a small world. That the next job he got was off in rural Missouri, but it was actually with people he had met when he was a basketball player out east.
And was he looking for a move, a change?
I think he was. He was coaching at this little college in Vermont. But it's up in the Green Mountains. It's a beautiful area. I loved it as a kid, but as a professional, I think he maybe wanted a little bigger stage. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't really a big physical education major at Castleton State, although it's actually a really neat place. It's a beautiful campus. And Truman State was building its physical education program. It was a Division II athletics powerhouse, and his job became to supervise student teachers who wanted to be coaches. So he really enjoyed it. He
what
there
city would that have been in?
It's in the town of Kirksville, Missouri.
Kirksville,
K-I-R-K-S.
Okay.
Ville, Missouri. So it's sort of like Northfield is named after North. I think Kirksville is named after Kirk.
Okay.
And there's a Civil War battle there, actually, in Kirksville, not a big one. But there's a normal school that then became Truman State University, which is the state liberal arts college, kind of like University of Minnesota Morris is for Minnesota. There's also an osteopathic school, osteopathic medicine, you know, DOs. The very first osteopathic school was in Kirksville. So it's a little town, you know, pretty far from any big city, but it's got interesting history of its own.
When you said normal school, what
that's
does
a
that
teacher's
mean?
College.
It was called Normal?
Well, the street that I lived on as a kid was called Normal Street. So the idea was teachers' colleges would be called normal schools.
Okay.
And then eventually it became Kirksville State Teachers' College, and then it eventually became Northeast Missouri State.
So was your dad kind of like an athletic director?
Well, he was more in the phys ed and recreation, so they called it athletics, physical education, recreation, but there was an athletic director who was separate, and my dad was a professor in the phys ed department.
And how about mom?
My mother studied speech therapy with six kids. She had to find a job that was a little bit more flexible, so she worked with Head Start.
Oh.
Yeah, working with, actually.
It was relatively new.
Right, it was a new program at that time. She taught a lot of the kids I grew up with, but the kids who maybe came from generation, you know, from families that didn't have a much of a college background, and the kids probably needed a little boost to get started. That's why they called it Head Start. And she knew a lot of the kids. Actually, when I was growing up, I would go over to friends' houses, and then the kids all knew her when she came to pick me up, because she had actually taught them when they were little.
What was the industry in Kirksville, Missouri, other than the college?
Well, yeah, education was a big one. There's a Florsheim factory.
Florsheim. As in shoes?
Yeah, shoes.
Very high quality shoes.
Very high quality shoes.
I sold those shoes.
Yeah, I know, and they probably got good money for them, right?
Yep.
So they might have been made in Kirksville, but it was a national company. So there was a place called Adair Foods that sold meats. You know, they processed probably hams or something.
Okay.
There was a creamery that smelled really bad when they were fermenting the milk and things for cheese, but that produced good milk. There was a kind of a nice little, there's a place called Hollister that built a big, beautiful building on the east side of the city that had its own lake and everything, and it's probably produced paper supplies. So I think it's for a little town, it was different. It's about the same size as Northfield, but whereas Northfield is a part of the greater Twin Cities, and so you get the Northfield News twice a week, and you know everybody can easily get the Southern edition of the
and of course local radio,
right? No. Well, that's the thing is that Northfield has local things, but you've also got this huge city around.
Yeah.
In Kirksville, I think Des Moines was 150 miles away. St. Louis was 200 miles away, and Kansas City is about 150. So if you count Columbia, Missouri as a big city, then maybe we had that. But otherwise, we were on our own, and so you ended up with a daily newspaper and, you know, all kinds of things. A wonderful local radio station, which was actually pretty neat. And so there's all kinds of stuff like that. So the town had more of its autonomy because it didn't have any bigger entity to draw on.
Was it in a valley? Was there a river nearby?
There's a river called the Sheridan River. Sheraton, and it flows eventually, I think, into the Mississippi, sort of like the Cannon. But we were about 50 miles to the west of Hannibal. So that's really the northeast. That's right on the border. We were a little bit inside, so we're northeast Missouri, but not right on the border. And about 40 miles from Iowa.
How old were you when you moved to Kirksville?
We moved there when I was 6 years old, and my mother played a dirty trick on me. She gave me a Superman t-shirt to go to school with, and so I got to the bus stop as soon as she left. One of the bigger kids started beating him up and said, "Look, I'm beating up Superman."
Yep.
So not a great, but I.
I don't know if your memory can go that far back, but I would assume that there might have been some dialect that the Missourians spoke, and you spoke New Englander,
right?
And so you had an accent.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I think so. Well, here's the thing: is we. I could do the Missouri accent. Here's a story. When I was a Carleton student, I needed to make money during the summers, so I got a job with the Harris Poles through the local employment agency, and I was going out to this rural area about 15 miles outside of Kirksville to interview farmers about the Middle East situation. And this is 1980. And so I remember meeting all the farmers, and they would say, "Well, I don't know much," but they'd give me very good common sense answers that actually made more sense than what was coming out of Washington at the time.
Oh, sure.
But they'd always say, but of course, you know, we're just farmers. The real intellectuals are the ones down the road. And it was this one family that was sort of the, and I interviewed all the farmers, and then I got to this family, and they were hostile. And I said, why are you so mean to me? I'm just from Kirksville, Missouri, right here around the corner. And they said, you don't sound like you're from Kirksville. And so they were judging me on the fact that they thought I was some city slicker who was coming out to try to make a bunch of country people look bad. But I'd actually grown up, you know, 10 miles away. Once they figured out that I was a local boy, they became a little nicer to me, and we had a nice conversation.
But. Well, Missourians have their own accent.
Yeah.
New England has their own accent.
Right.
I was shocked when somebody told me I had an accent.
Yeah.
When I moved to Indiana.
Right.
And you sound like a Midwesterner right now, but you could have fallen into doing the Missouri thing or the New England thing. Like some people that are brought foreigners that are brought here when they're 10 years old, and now they're 70 years old, and they still have that accent.
Right.
You know, so you were able to shed yourself that. Was that something you tried to do, or just happens?
I think in our family, we just spoke, and because there are six of us, the youngest kids have more of an accent from Missouri, because that's where they were born and raised. And I came in when I was six, and so I think I already had... My accent tends to change depending where I'm living.
Now, so, did the house that you moved into in Kirksville have chandeliers that would open secret doors?
No, it wasn't quite so exciting. I missed that, actually, because we start pulling on chandeliers, they'd come off. But we the house we lived in was a rented house. It was a big, big, nice rented house. And the owner kept on threatening to retire and move in and kick us out. But we lived there, I think, for 12 years.
Oh, through your entire education.
Yeah, on a street called Franklin Street. And one house away was this beautiful old house that dated from the Civil War and that still had bullets in it from the Battle of Kirksville.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But ours wasn't quite that beautiful, but it was nice.
It was at, what street was that?
Franklin Street.
Okay. And were there a lot of neighbors with kids?
Yeah, it was. There were some parts of town that were nothing but fancy. So I won't say Mayflower or something, but there were some parts of town that were newer and the houses were a little more upscale. And I think my parents deliberately moved us into a little bit more of an economically diverse neighborhood because they thought that's real world. Let's just live. And it was a nice house surrounded by a mix of houses. Some were really fancy. Some were not so fancy.
Now, growing up there with Deidre.
Yeah.
Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Deidre Aylin?
Yeah.
Okay. So far, so good. Dana?
Yeah.
Tasha?
Right.
I don't know where they got that name.
My dad's family is Russian, so.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. And Caitlin. So you're the oldest in the family.
Right.
And your dad is off to work every day. Your mom off to work?
No. She would wait until we got off to school, and then she would go off and work with Head Start. It used to be at a little local Air Force base.
Okay.
And then later they closed that down, and it was at the school district. But she would often go to the kids' houses to do the Head Start work.
Did you go to a public school or a parochial school?
No, public school.
Did they have parochial schools?
There was a school called Mary Immaculate, which is a Catholic school. I think it was a really nice little place. The kids at Mary Immaculate tended to be ahead of us in math, for whatever reason. But otherwise,
that was a great school.
I think it was, yeah.
Didn't go to high school.
I had friends who went there, and they were always a little higher in math than we were, but... Otherwise, I just went to the elementary schools in town.
So what did you do during the summertime when you were like 8, 9, 10, 11 years old and you had all of these siblings and you had friends that were in the neighborhood? Were you able to go off on your own and go fishing, swimming, or doing things like that before high school?
Yeah, we were able to do some of that. But part of what we did is there was always a lot of baseball. I mean... 50 years ago, baseball was the big sport. We didn't have soccer, so there was no competition, and we just played a lot of baseball, and you could go anywhere you wanted to.
Was that like American Legion or BFW?
It was, little kid, we just had little leagues, and so we had a lot of baseball. You could play that anywhere you went. You could pick up a football and go out and play. We would basically play things, and then there were a few neighbors who had little bicycle jumps and things that you could go in their backyards. There was a place down the street that owned a Honda motorcycle place, and they had a little trail in the back, and we didn't have a motorcycle, but we had our bicycles, and so we'd try to jump those, and we'd usually land on our heads. But
what was your first bicycle?
It was a Schwinn Typhoon.
How did you get it?
I saved up money. I saved up $20 because we were going off to New York City, and my father kept on telling me, he's a New Yorker, that you can get anything in New York. And so I got to New York, and I didn't really find anything that was that exciting, and a baseball hat would have cost half my money, so I just kept it. And then when I got back, I was complaining that New York had nothing that you couldn't get in this little small town in Missouri. And he said, well, what do you want to get? And I thought, I'd love to get a decent bicycle. So I got a gold Schwinn Typhoon.
Cool.
It was a really durable bike. I think it lasted for the next 30 years.
Okay, so now as a kid living there, and you do go out and have, did you have a swimming hole or a pool?
We didn't have a swimming hole. There was a lake. It's called Thousand Hills State Park, and it's a beautiful lake. And so you had a beach there, and there was a really nice swimming pool in town, too. It still is. They keep on upgrading, and every time I go back, it's getting nicer and nicer. But
did your father introduce you to anything like sportsmanship in regards to hunting and fishing?
He didn't because he was a New Yorker, but there was a local YMCA, and they didn't have a nice building. They do now, but they just had this teeny little storefront, and they had gymnastics. But they had a guy named Rick Mantione, who was just a really one of my father's former students, who ran the YMCA, and we did get to go out in the Sheraton River. So we'd go out and we'd hunt and fish. Well, not hunt, but we'd fished.
Okay. What kind of catfish? Or
yeah, catfish. I never caught any catfish. I caught crappies and things that you just want to throw
fun.
Back. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Or creek chubs.
Was were ultralight tackle available at that time?
You know, they might have had. We just got whatever fishing poles they handed us when we went out on these trips. But they were fun. I mean, that the YMCA actually got me out in the country because there were a lot of my friends who grew up in the country, and for them, their farm kids, they would go out and hunt fish on their own property. But you know, we didn't have any property like that, so that was our chance.
We're going to take a break here on the Wayne Eddy Affair at 9 minutes before 11 o'clock. My guest this morning is Charlie Cogan. He lives right here in Northfield, and we're talking about growing up now in Missouri.
Hi, welcome to this Subway ad for 5 foot long starting at $4.99 each. How do you want it?
Secret DJ set.
At a retirement home?
Weird, I like it.
DJ sandwich in the house.
What'd he say?
Gold butt mopo.
Meatball marinara, $4.99.
How much?
$4.99.
Subway, make it what you want. Limited time only at participating restaurants. Prices and subs included may vary. Additional charge for extras plus pitiful tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.
Has your path been leading you towards a career in urban planning? Well, here's the opportunity you've been waiting for. The City of Northfield has an opening for a project manager in the Community Development Department. This two-year position is well compensated with an excellent benefit package. So if you have a degree and experience related to urban planning and community development, make the right choice for you and for your community and go to the City of Northfield website and click on Employment Opportunities for more information about the position and details on how to apply. The City of Northfield is an equal opportunity employer.
Number one in all of 1978. On the Wayne Eddy Affair, broadcasting live from our studios in downtown Northfield, Minnesota, this is the 195.1 FM, 1080 on your AM dial. Did you notice how I talked right up before they started singing? That's called being a disc jockey. Name this tune, it was number one.
Is it Night Fever?
You're correct.
And then it's the Bee Gees, so they got two songs in the top 10.
You did 100%.
Yeah.
Did you say they had two?
I think, well, they had the other one, too, Staying Alive.
Right. Well, the Bee Gees, listen to this. In that 1978, they had the number four song, Staying Alive, and Andy Gibb had the number nine song, Thicker Than Water.
Right.
Andy Gibb also had the number two song, Shadow Dancing, and the Bee Gees, including Andy Gibb, Night Fever. 7 minutes before 11 o'clock on Kim, a friend you can count on. I want to thank Yogi Repman for introducing me to Charlie. Charlie Cogan is a guest. Cogan is a guest of mine right now. And Charlie, obviously, we're running out of time, but we do have you in grade school. But I want to talk about when I invited you to join me here on the air on a particular day, I believe last week, you indicated that you had to leave the town of Northfield, Minnesota, and do something for the Rotarians. And you are a member of the Rotary Club. By the way, how is Scott Richardson doing as president?
A lot better than I did as president. He's actually,
you were president?
Yeah, but you know, he's an articulate guy, so he can manage a meeting. He's dignified. He upholds the honor of the post.
Well, you're dignified.
Yeah, we all have our own way, right?
So you're president of the Rotary Club, and of course, the Rotary Club does a lot of good for education, exchange students, etc. What were you traveling to Wisconsin for, and where in Wisconsin?
So, when I left Carleton in 1982, I went to the Peace Corps in West Africa.
1980. Oh, you left as a graduate.
I graduated in 82. I actually left for the Peace Corps in 83.
Okay.
And I was in West Africa in a country called Togo that I couldn't find on a map when I got in, but I found it later and got there in one piece. And spent 3 years, actually, doing work that I can talk about some other time. But while I was there, I also met my wife, whose name is Nalong, or Virginie, and she was actually the subject of a really nice article when the Northfield News did a series on immigrants in Northfield called Names of Northfield. I think she was one of the people featured, and one of her big projects is that she came from a family that had faced some real challenges. Her mother died when she was about 10, and her father became blind about 2 years later, even though until then he'd been a pretty prosperous farmer. And she was bright and had been one of the top students in her region on the sixth grade exams. You have to take, it's a French system, so you have to take an exam after sixth grade. And she was one of the top 10 in the whole region, but she couldn't go to junior high because she didn't have the money. And her father walked with her about 40 miles into the city to a Catholic school. And I'm not Catholic, but I have to give them some credit. They interviewed her and her father, and they gave her a full scholarship, and she was able to attend junior high school and then went on to high school. She's worked in Northfield as a nurse for years, and all of that was because of that school. So we were going to Rice Lake, Wisconsin, because the Rice Lake Rotary Club helped us to provide some computers and some other things to the school in Togo where my wife went to school.
Okay, so you were kind of an ambassador to the Rice Lake Rotarians in their quest to present the Togo Rotary Club
right
educational tools.
Right. They helped us, and we were thanking them and showing them pictures of the computers, and they built a basketball court.
Okay.
And there's a school called Barron County up there too, Barron County Sunrisers. So the two Rotary clubs got together.
Barron?
Yeah, Barron County.
The town where that young lady was.
Right, it's right next door.
Oh.
And so they talked about that case. She hadn't turned up alive yet at that point, so that was a wonderful thing when she did. But they worked together, and they each gave $500, so it became $1,000. But then the district, the Rotary district, matches 100% everything that's given by clubs. So it turned into $2,000.
Which is a lot of money in Togo.
It bought three good computers for the computer lab, and there's a Northfield group. There's some students. I don't know if I'm sure you've interviewed Dina Fessler over the years.
Oh, gosh, I've touched it.
She's got so much energy. Right. Well, her daughters are doing a reading group with girls in Togo at the school, but they needed better computers so that they can sit and do it by Skype.
You know the girls.
Oh, of course I know the girls, yeah.
Can you name them? They have the most beautiful names.
Well, I think there might be Sunny and I'll keep on thinking. Now that you put me on the Daisy, and I know I'm going to...
You're doing better than I am.
And then Coco.
Coco, Sunny, and Daisy.
Because my daughter used to love Coco when she was little. She would come by and pick up our son at the daycare.
Well, I've watched them grow up in a radio studio here. I had a mom when they were just little kids. You know, now they're...
They're high school kids, right?
Yeah.
Amazing. So they're doing
a
reading
group. Can
you
imagine raising three girls at the same time? Same age. There's one. There's two the same age and one right behind him. But is Dina in Asia now?
I think she must be. I think I saw something on Facebook. Not that I'm social media guy, but I saw something. I think she's in India.
And
I know she was in Somalia not too long ago at a school that we would get applications from in Somaliland.
Yeah.
We get an occasional applicant from the school called Barso Tech. And I saw her picture with a camel, and I said, "Are you in Somalia?" She said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, there you should visit a Barso Tech." And she said, "Where do you think I am?" So,
cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'll have to get in touch with her. I just got an email from her. So.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's you know, on this show, there's always something that connects me to the individual, and you knowing Dina Fessler and her daughters, there's a connection, and Yogi Repman, there's a connection, and I was a former member of Rotary Club.
Right. I remember you there.
Really?
Well, I was just a brand new member, so nobody knew me. But
was I on crutches?
I think you had your surgery maybe a little later. I think you might have been in about 2003, was it?
Yeah.
That you might have been having the surgeries. And,
yeah. I remember.
It was over at the golf club back then.
Yes. There was a gentleman, and he was a retired dentist. Strike a bell?
It might. Appledorn? But he wasn't retired yet.
No. anyhow, just a nice guy, and unfortunately has passed away, but he used to pick me up.
McCarty?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, actually,
thank
his wife much. Taught my son. She's wonderful.
Yeah.
And he was a great guy as well.
Yeah, and he'd pick me up
right.
with my wheelchair.
Right.
And then wheel me in, and I sure did it. Don McCarty.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Well, look at the clock.
I think we got negative 15 seconds.
Amen. I say adieu. I have to say thank you very much for coming in today, and we'll have you come back, and let's talk about after grade school, elementary school. Talk about, did they have a junior high in Kirksville?
They had a junior high, Ophelia Parish Junior High School, and okay. It was where all the teachers got their practice, the student teachers got their practice on us.
Okay, so we'll start about there, and then we'll bring you to Northfield.
Sure.
All right?
It's a nice place to bring us to.
Yeah. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
You're welcome. My guest this morning, Charlie Cogan, on the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. And this is the one, 95.1 FM. And, of course, for over 50 years, KYMN 1080 AM on your radio dial from downtown Northfield.
Minnesota News Network, I'm Tasha Radel. Thousands are expected to take part in tomorrow's Women's March Minnesota in St. Paul and beyond. Local organizer Alicia Donahue says the goal of the march...
to join in solidarity with over 175 sister marches across the United States and a national march in D.C.